Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson. And if you're one of our patrons, this is your extended, that means longer, ad-free version of this week's show. And if you're not yet a patron but would like to get our ad-free extended versions or listen and interact with us live, and we have Al and John and Stephen in the chat room listening right now, welcome to you. You can head to patreon.com/UK tech and get instant access to our entire back catalogue of extended shows. We don't have any new patrons to announce this week, unfortunately, but thank you to everyone who is continuing to support us. As I said, Al, John and Stephen, it's great to have you with us, and also with me in the flesh, because Ian is away tending to his underground blast-proof turkey farm. It is Kate Langson.
Hello.
My wife. Yes, I've dragged the wife in to talk about this, because she was very interested in a lot of the topics that we discuss every single week, and has some opinions on this week, and also has a new Samsung Galaxy S10. We're going to try and spoof its facial recognition system a little bit later, aren't we?
We are.
Is it weird to be sitting in the room recording the podcast instead of listening to it?
A little bit.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Normally I'm not allowed in here.
That's very true, for good reason. Let's crack on into the news. Shoppers at Argos will now be able to pick out and buy items by taking a picture with their smartphone's camera. This is according to a write-up in The Telegraph and announced by Argos on Monday. Using a new visual search app from the retailer, shoppers will be able to search Argos's catalogue of products to find the same or, and I think this bit is probably crucial, similar items. Now, Argos has been a bit of a staple in... that was a pun. No, it wasn't. They're glued, aren't they? They're not stapled, the Argos catalogues.
Yeah,
but been a bit of a staple in British shopping culture for the last few decades. And still to this day, despite the success of Amazon and online retail, still has physical stores, and in those physical stores still has gigantic printed catalogues of products, which must cost a ton of money to print, a ton of money to ship around, and but despite it being 2019, they are still in existence. Kate, you, before we started recording the show, you asked me the question, why does anybody go into an Argos?
I did. I don't really get why Argos is still around. I put it in the category with Woolworths, like, back in the day, it was the shop you went to buy
Mr. Blobby Pink Lemonade.
Lots of all the things that you would ever need. And now, if you want any of those stuff, you would just go on Amazon or a better shop
than Argos.
Than Argos.
The thing is, it still exists for a reason, because some people do need that immediacy of acquiring delivery. And in fact, Al in the chat room said Amazon takes at least a day. I mean, actually, some of Amazon's stuff you can now get delivered same day with Amazon Prime now. But I am one of the people that still goes to an Argos, because the other day I went into an Argos for? Oh, it was for a cable. I needed a new cable. And I didn't want to have to wait for Amazon to deliver said cable. So I went into an Argos. And to be honest, the Argos didn't actually have the cable that I wanted.
Shocking.
Yes. But the fact is, I was one of the people that went in, and I go past an Argos every day.
So you didn't actually buy anything?
No, but I went in with the intention of buying something, because the Maplin's around the corner is shut down now. So, and Argos has, unbelievably in this technological world, a Maplin electronics store in central London has been outlasted by an Argos.
That is surprising.
Yeah.
Where's this Argos?
This Argos is on Poultry. So it's just outside my office, near Bank Station in London. And if you walk up, it's mostly rows of shops and suit shops and things for the busy financial professional. But in the middle of it, there's an Argos. It's next to a Clinton's Cards or Paper Chase or one of those card companies. Yeah. And I think a lot of people do get stuff delivered there and pick it up. But inexplicably still in use. I remember Andy and I, the highlight of the quarter of the year was always getting the new Argos catalogue and looking at the new digital watches.
Yeah, I used to look through all the toys.
The toys?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you were a bit younger than me.
I was.
Yeah. Now, we used to always look and see if they had a new model of television control watch.
Ooh.
The little ones that
kind of... I remember those.
Yeah, they were the ones that kind of had like a calculator. It was a calculator watch, but it had the bonus of a little bit sticking out of the side and you could program it to control the infrared signals on a TV. And we used to have one and we'd go around and flash it through people's windows and turn their TVs on and off. That's how we entertained ourselves in the early 90s.
We had a boy at school turn the school TV off during a lesson and he didn't get expelled, but he got very much in trouble.
Yeah. That was
good times.
Yeah, very good times. That would have been me at our school. And there's a couple of interesting things that that have come up in the chat while we've been talking. John says he went into an Argos because he was given a gift card that he was only able to use at an Argos.
Oh, so that's a good reason to.
That's an excellent reason to be going.
I say the last time I went to one?
Yes.
It was to buy a frying pan when I lived in Camberwell in London. And that was way before I met you, so well over 5-6 years ago.
So the question would be, if you went into a different store with your smartphone now and you could pull out an Argos app and scan an item and have it say, okay, well, we don't have this exact frying pan because presumably frying pans all look the same when they're printed. But we do have this very similar Tefal non-stick. Would you like to order it from Argos? Would that not appeal?
How is it different to going into Argos and looking through the catalogue for all the saucepans are presumably on the same page? So if you go, you're like, I want this saucepan, type the number in, it says we don't have any. So you go to the one next to it on the page.
Because that relies on you going into an Argos, whereas this you can do from your phone, presumably from another store.
Oh, and order it in.
And order
and
it in.
Or pick it up.
And they do home delivery as well. You know, they still have a modern service. It's just they also have the less modern service of printing catalogues and having physical stores. And I would love Argos to stick around. And if this is a way that that helps it stick around, then that's all good with me. But
yeah.
Next time we need a saucepan in our house. Well, let everyone know if you have any thoughts on this. Would you go to an Argos? Do you have an Argos catalogue in the house? Let us know. hello@techpodcast.uk. The latest phone to implement face unlock with nothing but the normal front camera is the Galaxy S10, the Samsung Galaxy S10, and users across the web, according to Ars Technica this week, are reporting that the feature is easily confused or defeated. Ars says there are a number of reports that say the 2D image sensor can be fooled by, surprise, a 2D image. And The Verge was able to unlock one with a video, and YouTube channel Unbox Therapy was able to unlock one by just playing one of its public channels in front of the camera. And the worst example, again according to Ars Technica, is from androidworld.it, which was able to unlock the Galaxy S10 by waving a still photo around in front of the phone. The S10 can also reportedly have trouble telling different people apart. And one security researcher, a lady called Jane Wong, said she was able to unlock her brother's phone with her face. Presumably they do look alike.
Yeah, I was going to say they must look somewhat similar.
Yeah. Now, we were looking at this on your phone, your S10 earlier, Kate, as I'm sure you remember, because there were some interesting caveats that came up that you have to go through in order to set this up. And we've got a screenshot here.
Yeah, I hadn't actually set up facial recognition, so I went to do it. And then the very first thing you see before you set it up says, face recognition is less secure than other lock types because there is a possibility that someone who looks like you or who uses an image of your face could unlock your phone. Keep in mind that face recognition might not recognize you if there are major changes to your appearance, such as heavy makeup, facial hair changes, or glasses. If you usually wear glasses, you might want to keep them on while you set up face recognition.
Yeah.
And then you said something clever about Apple.
Yes, I said this is what the iPad and the iPhone don't do because they use a 3D sensor. So instead of it just looking and effectively taking a photo and saying, yes, that looks like you, it's actually physically scanning the contours of your face using an array of cleverly fired dots.
Yes.
So what I thought we could do, since you hadn't actually set this up and hadn't tried this before now, is see if we can fool it.
Yes.
So have you set it up?
Yes.
On your foot? You have
so,
set it
yeah,
up.
So yeah, look, it's opening.
Oh yes, she's holding
I'm
it up.
My phone.
And it is unlocked. Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm firing up the camera and I'm using my iPad for this because I want to take a bigger picture or rather have a bigger display. So Kate, look at me, is looking at me head on. I've taken a photo. I'll take one more. She's got glasses on, but I see you've shaved off the facial hair.
I did, just to confuse the phone.
Exactly, yeah. But you've left the glasses on as it suggested. Okay, so I now have a picture of your face in huge view on my iPad. Let's lock your phone, and I'm going to put this close to your phone, and let's see if this works. It did!
Oh my God, it did.
It actually did work. So I could get into your phone by just using this picture.
You could.
That's pretty
It's a good
worrying.
Job we're married.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've actually never seen that done before in person, so that is quite impressive. Are you going to leave that on?
I'm probably not going to leave it on. Not because I'm concerned about security, really, because really I'm with my phone all the time. I exist in 3 locations, which is my house, my car, and my work. And my phone is usually in my pocket, or if I'm in the house, it's in the house.
Yep.
So I don't really worry about getting my phone stolen or...
What if you lose it?
How would I lose it?
That's true. That's a fair point.
I realise it's a big issue for lots of people, but I don't really go to London anymore. I don't carry it in a bag. It's always in my pocket. I don't leave it in my car. At work, it's in my pocket because I use it as a calculator.
Yeah. I mean, I personally, I think having this feature on is just a massive security risk.
Yeah.
Because if you know whose phone you've got and
you have a picture of them.
And you have a picture of them. Or even if you don't even know the person personally, but if you're sitting in a cafe and you can take a photo of somebody from a distance or even up close without them realizing, and then you steal their phone and you can unlock it with this feature, then that is very easy to do. I mean, I looked at your phone there, and the Galaxy S10 is quite distinctive to look at because it has the in-screen camera cutout in the top right-hand corner. So if I was a tech-savvy thief, I could be on the lookout for that model and think, right, that's the model. I can definitely do that. So I'm going to take a photo of that man or that woman, and I'm going to steal their phone, and then I'm going to do it.
Potentially.
So while you were talking, I took a video.
Oh, great.
Yes, because I want to see if we can get it to work on a video as well. So,
has it got sound on it?
No, I've turned the sound down.
Good.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm playing the video in front. Oh, it has. I can see it. It's unlocked. It took about 3.5 seconds, but it did work using the video as well. Yeah, I think that's a really dangerous feature. I wouldn't have that on at all. I mean, it's good that they were very honest about it when you were setting it up. You know, it says this feature might not be secure. Yeah. It could be unlocked by camera. They're not trying to hide away from that. But the fact is,
Why is it on there?
Yeah.
The fingerprint thing is great.
So that's behind the screen, right? You found that that's worked well.
Fingerprint.
Yeah.
It's sometimes it's hit and miss, but usually it's fine. The issue I had initially was because I've been using the S9 and it's on the back.
Oh,
I had set it up as my index finger because of the way you hold your phone, you pick your phone up
like that.
And I was automatically trying to do that every time I pick the phone up.
But that's just a muscle memory thing, isn't it?
It is. And I didn't know where the fingerprint sensor was on this phone because I didn't know if it was down there, if it was up there. Once I realised where I meant to put my finger, it does seem to work most of the time.
Yeah. Well, that's
which is a lot more secure.
It is a lot more. It is. Yeah. I mean, frankly, even having a standard PIN and a password is probably more secure than having the facial unlock feature on all the time. But interesting. I mean, I don't know anyone personally who has suffered some kind of a loss or theft of data specifically as a result of somebody being able to unlock their phone with a photo. I'm sure it's happened. Mm-hmm. And I have no doubt it's not limited to, you know, Samsung phones. I'm sure that many of these sorts of basically, if a technology is using this kind of 2D scanning, then it's essentially subject to the same issues. But it definitely seems to be confusing as to why the feature is on there in the first place, given that Samsung itself is being very transparent and warning you it's not very safe. Mm. And we've just proved that, in fact, it isn't, and it doesn't work. So I don't really know why it's there. Fingerprint should be in a fingerprint and passcode, or fingerprint and face. I don't know. Maybe, you know, two is better than one.
Well, I have fingerprint and pattern, and they say when you set it up, the pattern is the most secure thing. I think they say it's even more secure than the fingerprint pattern, which is surprising.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, if anyone out there in listener land, in pod paradise, what other ones have I got?
I don't know.
No, me neither. But anyone listening has experience using this, or got any horror stories, or positive stories, obviously, as well, then do let us know. hello@techpodcast.uk. Be very interesting to hear your experiences with using the 2D face unlock on these phones. Smart speakers are so popular, the UK is using them now to calculate inflation, Engadget wrote this week. That's because every year the UK's Office for National Statistics adds top consumer products to its basket of goods. And this is a collection of products or services that indicates how people are generally spending their money. Annually, popular items are added, and ones that have become less popular get tossed out of the bag. And so this year, smart speakers made the cut and got in the list, but hi-fi systems got the axe.
Sad face.
Very sad face, yes. Kate can confirm. I have a sad face right now because of my love of hi-fi. In 2015, the ONS added music streaming services to this basket, and now people are buying smart speakers that allow them to stream. And so as consumers are opting for devices like the Amazon Echo and Google Home, Apple's HomePod, I suppose, to an extent, they're understandably less likely to want to purchase proper hi-fi systems. Now, Engadget also reminded us that in 2014, or rather since 2014, Netflix and Amazon Instant Video, computer, video games, subscription services, e-cigarettes, headphones, mobile phone accessories, and digital game and computer software sales have made their way into this basket of goods, while sat-navs, CD-ROMs, and this is a weird one that I never thought was in there even in the first place, DVD recorders have all been removed from the list.
DVD recorders?
Yeah.
So, like...
Yeah, as in it's sitting...
I don't even know what that is.
Sitting under your TV and recording TV onto blank DVDs instead of a VHS.
Did people used to do that?
A very, very limited number of people apparently used to do that.
Wow.
Yeah. So they've been removed, apparently of no surprise to us. Now, we've sort of talked about the rise of smart speakers. In fact, Al in the chat room says his folks used to use that. Used to use a DVD recorder.
Good to know.
Yeah. I mean, there's literally the only person I've ever heard use a DVD recorder in that.
Stephen says he had one too.
Oh, he got one for his parents. Okay, so maybe this is the problem. Maybe it was limited to people's parents and I never bought my parents one.
Because they wanted to record stuff. They didn't have a Digibox.
Yeah.
You couldn't get VHSs anymore.
Yeah.
So they had to resort to a DVD recorder.
Apparently so.
This is a world that's brand new to us, isn't it?
I've never known that this was an... As Stephen says, it was the worst. Yeah, I mean, I've never used... I mean, I had DVD recorders in, you know, PCs, but not for this use. But I thought everyone at that point was using, you know, hard drive technology as a stopgap to streaming. But hey-ho, we've learned something today about the British obsession with recordable DVDs and keeping the blank media industry somewhat more alive than we thought it would be. But the ONS adding smart speakers, to be honest, comes as very little surprise given how many of these devices are being sold. What is of intrigue to me, or interest to me, is how many people buy them and then actually continue using them. Because in our house, Kate, we had an Amazon Echo.
We did.
And got rid of it.
Well, I think we still have it, don't we?
It's boxed up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if anyone wants an Amazon Echo, hello@techpodcast.uk, you can have one.
Send an SAE.
Yeah, stamped addressed envelope. Al says no thanks in the chat room. Oh, well, you've done yourself out of a free Amazon Echo. We had one, the HomePods, we've got two HomePods linked up as a stereo pair, but we disabled the Siri functionality because it kept thinking we were talking to it when it wasn't.
She thought the TV was talking to it.
Yeah. And all we were really using it for is setting timers, I think. Did we ever use it for anything other than setting timers?
Sometimes you would ask it, like, when we were watching a film and we didn't know who an actor was or something. Or
did I do
if
that?
An actor was in... Yeah, we used to do that, briefly. Like, how old is such and such? Just random questions, but, like, not really using it for anything of importance.
Yeah, I mean, I also have it enabled on my iPad, and I do use that for a lot more things, and it would always default to using the HomePod because both devices would hear the trigger word. But because both devices also knew each other was in the same room, it would always default to the HomePods because that's the way the system was set up, and I didn't want that. I wanted actually to default to the iPad, so we just turned that off as well. The Google Home, we had one for a little bit, but
did we?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. We had a Google Home and stopped using that. And the main reason was because, A, none of them sound very good. I mean, the HomePods do sound the best, and that's why we've kept those around. But even then, they're just a backup for if I can't be bothered to stand up and turn on the hi-fi. Whereas the others, we got rid of them, if you remember, because you got really worried that they were funneling ads towards you.
It was spying on me. This was when I wasn't working,
yeah.
And we had the Echo. And I actually used it to play music, and I would, when I was in the kitchen, I would say, play this song, and it would play it. And I was like, this is great, I love it, I'm going to use it all the time. And then I kept getting adverts for things that I'd only ever talked about with you in the house.
Yeah, like the orange
drink thing. And there was another thing, I can't remember, but it was like things that I know I'd never Googled, I'd only ever had a conversation with you. And I was getting ads for them, and it was too weird. And then I think you had one as well, and then you were like, I'm going to turn it off.
I did. I mean, I remember saying at the time that I had an explanation for the drink, in that it would probably have been part of a massive online and offline promotion where the drink was being promoted on the end of aisles in supermarkets, were being advertised on TV, which, you know...
I don't think that's true, though. I know you maintain that that's the case, but I think that's a reach, and I don't think that's true.
I'm fairly sure it is true, but it also may not be. So I'm not going to sit here and say it is definitely not the case. The chat room saying Al Struthers says if we have them in the show houses at work and they just randomly start speaking, sorry, I didn't hear that, without any trigger words. That definitely happened to us.
So I work with like completely different people to you. You work with tech journalists, and all your friends are tech journalists, so you tend to have, like, you all have these things. People I work with will literally save up to buy something like this, and then when they get it, or they might ask for it for their birthday, and it's a really big deal. And I know people who have had to save up, or wanted to save up and buy like an Amazon Echo, and then they got it, and it was this really big, exciting thing, and they were like, oh, I've got an Echo, and oh, it can do this, and it can do this. And when you've done that, you're not just going to go, oh, it's listening to my conversation, I'm going to put it in a cupboard.
No,
you're going to keep on using it, I think, regardless if you've got a security issue with it, because you've saved up for it, or it was a birthday present, because you're not...
True.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, I wanted the Amazon because it was the first good one, and I wanted to try it out. Yes, interesting. Okay, well, any other thoughts? Obviously, welcome. hello@techpodcast.uk. Interested in hearing how you're using your smart speakers.
You're used to hearing the smooth, velvet sound of Nate's voice drizzled over your ears like a warm eardrum syrup, topped off with the freshly squeezed citrus tang of an Ian Morris opinion. Supporters of the show at patreon.com/UK Tech enjoy second helpings every week. So pull up a chair, find your nearest spoon, and tuck into a sumptuous extra helping with no commitment. If you have any allergies, please inform a waiter.
Kate, would you like to take my hand and jump into the deep pool of feedback?
Sure.
This week, don your goggles and your bathing suit. I'm here in my Speedos, as you can see.
See them? That's delightful.
Yep. Okay.
At least you're not naked.
This is true. Not now. This comes in from Phil. He said, in response to our conversation around the micropayments and cash transfer thing we talked about last week with Naomi, I moved to Sweden from the UK a few years ago, and the process of transferring money is simplified here to the point of ubiquity by a single app called Swish, which crucially is supported and part owned by all the major Swedish banks, rather than having a separate payment app for each bank. When you register for an account, your mobile number is linked to your bank account after undergoing standard ID checks. From then on, you can transfer money to anyone via the app simply by inputting their phone number, the amount, and then a 6-digit PIN code. The money is transferred immediately and they get a notification saying it has arrived. I don't know if there's a limit, but I've transferred the equivalent of several hundred pounds at once before when lending someone some money for a last-minute emergency. The app is so ubiquitous that many small shops, cafes, and major online retailers now also accept Swish as a form of payment. And if you get on a bus or train in Stockholm without a ticket, you can just Swish them the fare and then show a QR code to the driver or conductor to scan. Just thought I would send you some information about what I perceive to be an incredibly well-functioning money app transfer system in response to your open question last week. Thanks for the show, Phil. Well, thanks for the comment.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, I don't know why we couldn't
have... I wish I lived in Sweden.
There's lots of good reasons to live in Sweden. The music scene, for one. Fantastic melodic death metal bands up there. Many of whom you've seen with me, actually. In Flames, for example, being one of the best reasons to live in Sweden, because presumably
but
you can...
But this is number two,
yeah. I mean, maybe you could pay for your In Flames ticket with Swish. This is what I wish we had over here. I swish we had it. Yeah, and Stephen Huxtable says Apple Pay Cash is taking its sweet time. Yeah, I don't know anyone who's using Apple Pay Cash here. Maybe our American listeners who have had it for longer than anyone else has can let us know if they're using Apple Pay Cash.
What is Apple Pay Cash?
That's a very good question. I'm glad you asked. It's essentially peer-to-peer payments, a bit like PayPal, but built into your iPhone.
So it's Apple Pay for each other.
That is the way to describe it, yes. It's Apple Pay for each other.
So my description was better than your description, would you say?
I think we'll leave it to the listeners to determine that, but I'm gonna think
I actually didn't know what it was.
Yeah. So. No, that is a good way of describing it. We also had a lovely email from Sam as well, who wrote in to say that he'd purchased a few Bitcoins now and again. And one of the ways of that he could pay for those Bitcoins was using Barclays Pingit, which I thought was an extremely interesting use for Pingit. We'd asked for people's examples of how they used Barclays service, and apparently buying Bitcoin is one of those. So thank you, Sam, for that comment. And also thank you to Phil for your insights from Sweden. Now, text message obviously keeps you informed about the British tech landscape, but we're going to check in with our good friend Tom Merritt, a Daily Tech News show. Tom, what has been going on this week?
This week on Daily Tech News Show, we talk about facial scanning at U.S. airports, the good and the bad, Tim Berners-Lee's hope for the future of the web, whether IBM was within its rights to use Flickr images to train an AI, the idea of monopsonies, that's when a buyer, not a seller, corners the market, and whether that applies to Facebook and Apple, and finally, what companies could or should do to stop live streaming of terror like the events in New Zealand. That's all at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
Thank you, Tom.
Fact, I was going to jump in and say thank you, Tom, and then I didn't.
Oh, Tom was at our wedding, of course. He probably thanked him then for all of his promos. But thank you also to our patrons supporting us every week. If you're not a patron but would like to get our ad-free extended versions, do please head to patreon.com/UK Tech and help us finish March with maybe just one more patron than we had last month. You know, every little bit helps. And we're extremely grateful. But we're always extremely grateful as well for everyone listening on our free ad-supported feed and leaving us reviews on iTunes. That's the way that the word actually gets out in the first place about the show, when you tell your friends and leave great reviews. So however you're supporting us, thank you very, very much. Now, Kate.
Hello.
Hello. It's normally at this point that I get a guest to promote their work or something. But do you want to talk about Vets for Pets?
I can do.
If your animal...
I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about them as a business, really.
Fair enough.
But if you have a pet... He's He's laughing at me. If you have a pet and they're not registered with a vet, go and register now.
There you go.
Because if you have an emergency and you're not registered, you'll have to pay more.
There you go. It's better for the animals.
And stick to one vet. Don't be changing all the time, because that's rude.
Is it annoying?
It's rude.
Okay. Well, thank you.
I can say lots of other things about vets, but I'll leave it there.
You should start a podcast.
I don't think I'm very good.
Well, I thought you were great. And thank you for helping this week not just be a giant monologue from me in absence of Ian and Andy this week. So very grateful
to
see you, Kate. Thank you for everybody for listening, and we will see you in a week.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.